I'd like you to share with us, if you can, a little about how you feel the pandemic was used to assert control, profit the pharmaceutical industry, grant opportunity to regulate, introduce surveillance and measures that may otherwise have been resisted. What does the pandemic period tell us about power? And in the event that you became president, how would you address what's happened in the last couple of years?
I wrote a book about how the pandemic was misused, and that it was not, you know, the public health response was not about public health. It was a militarized and monetized response. It was a pretense for clamping down totalitarian controls. And the weird thing about the pandemic was this constant involvement by the CIA and by the national intelligence agencies and by the military. When Operation Warp Speed made its presentation to FDA, to the committee they call the VRBPAC committee at FDA, VRBPAC asked for the organizational charts, which were classified up to that time. And when Warp Speed turned over the organizational charts, they shocked everybody, because the top organization that had managed Warp Speed was not HHS, which is a public health agency. It wasn't CDC or NIH or FDA. It was the NSA, a spy agency. So that was the top, agency, the lead agency on Operation Warp Speed and the pandemic was the NSA. And the second agency was the Pentagon. And when you start looking at, you know, it turns out that, you know, the vaccines were developed not by Moderna and Pfizer. They were developed by NIH. They're their own. The patents are owned 50% by NIH, nor were they manufactured by Pfizer or by Moderna. They were manufactured by military contractors. And basically, Pfizer and Moderna were paid to put their stamps on those vaccines as if they came from the pharmaceutical industry, but you know that's not what they were doing. They were coming from, you know, this was a military project from the beginning, and one of the things I detail in my book is these simulations that I uncovered, about 20 different simulations, coronavirus and pandemic simulations. That started in 2000, in 2001, the first one, right before the anthrax attacks. And then every year the CIA was doing these, and the CIA was sponsoring them all. And they were, the last one was Event 201, which was in October of 2019. And the participants in there are Avril Haines, who was the former deputy director of the CIA, who has been managing cover-ups her entire life. She did the Guantanamo Bay and, you know, the spying on the Senate. And she's right. She is now the director, DNI, Director of National Intelligence, which makes her basically the highest ranking officer at the NSA, which managed the pandemic. So you have a spy who is convening these pandemic simulations. And in each of these simulations, going back 20 years, they're simulating a public health response. They're not doing the kind of things, how do we stockpile vitamin D? How do we get people outdoors, losing weight, you know, doing exercise? How do we develop an information grid to all the 15 million doctors, frontline physicians all over the world? We're going to be encountering this disease so that we can get their information about what they're doing that works and what doesn't work, and put together a model of, you know, okay, here are the drugs, the repurposed drugs that are work, here are the treatments that work. None of that happened. We had an incredible opportunity for managing pandemic in a way that was, you know, intelligent and sensitive and you know, devastating to the disease. But we didn't do any of those things. It was all about how you use the pandemic to clamp down censorship. How do you use it to, you know, do forced lockdowns, which, by the way, the lockdowns, every pandemic preparedness document that had been adopted by the major public health agencies, whether it was CDC, WHO, the European Health Agency, the National Health Services in Britain, All of them said, you don't do lockdowns. You quarantine the sick. You protect the vulnerable. And you let everybody else go back to work, because the lockdowns actually amplify the impacts of the disease. You will, if you isolate people, it makes them more vulnerable. It makes it, you know, breaks down their immune system. And if you lock them indoors, it's going to spread the respiratory virus. And so all the things they were doing were, that they were drilling, were about clamping down totalitarian controls. And if you look at that event 201, which is still on YouTube, you can still look it up and go to the fourth seminar that day. It's broken into four parts. And remember, the people who are here, who are they? Avril Haines, the CIA, DNI, Director of National Intelligence, who was the CIA Deputy Director, former Bill Gates, you know, a lot of Tony Fauci's people, the pharmaceutical industries, the big media, Bloomberg, et cetera, all the social media companies. And then somebody odd, who's George Gao, who's the director of the Chinese CDC. So this is in October of 2019. Nobody knows about coronavirus there, and yet they're drilling a coronavirus epidemic, a world global coronavirus epidemic. Nobody's going to ever hear the word coronavirus. The Chinese first acknowledged it on January 1st, so 3 months later. But we now know coronavirus was already circulating in Wuhan, and the Chinese knew about it at least by September 19th. So that's a month before that pandemic simulation. George Gao is the Chinese head of the CDC and the Chinese expert on coronavirus. So clearly he must have known that coronavirus was circulating on September 19th, a month before that simulation. The Chinese military kicked down the door of the Wuhan lab, went in and took all of the genomic sequences off of the public-facing websites and started destroying all of the links between the lab and the virus, and put a military general, General Wei, in charge of the lab. So they clearly knew that it had come from the lab and that it was already circulating. And it circulated out, you know, we know, down the subway line that leads to the airport, from the lab to the airport. So they knew it in October, and they had the simulation in New York, and people there, some of those people must have known it was already circulating. And what are they talking about? The fourth simulation that day. And you can go up on YouTube right now and look this up. They talk about how do we stop people from saying that this came from a lab leak. And the people who are leading that discussion are the CIA director, Avril Haines, deputy director, and George Gao from the Chinese CDC. And Avril Haines says, you know, essentially she's saying, George Gao is saying, we got to censor the social media. We got to stop them from saying it's a lab leak. Anybody who says that needs to be deplatformed. This is 6 months before all this started happening. And then Avril Haines says, not only do we have to censor, but we need to flood the zone with authoritative voices who dismiss the idea that this was a lab leak. Oh, they were, you know, either they're incredible soothsayers, or there's something weird going on with this, that they were doing it. And that is in the first one. They were doing this again and again. They did it 6 months earlier, the same thing, another coronavirus epidemic. And I detail all of these in my book, and every one of them the CIA wrote the script for. Now, when Biden gets in there, or when, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, Mike Pompeo, who's the Secretary of State, says, this looks like it may have come from Wuhan. We should check this out. So he gets four different branches of the State Department to do an investigation, a massive investigation about whether it's come from Wuhan. If you read Catherine Eben's article on Vanity Fair, she does an amazing job at this. And she shows that intelligence officers came into one of those meetings later on this spring and said, we're shutting this whole thing down because the U.S. government, which means Fauci, but also the CIA, was funding all of that research at that lab. So Fauci funded about $26 million The CIA was the biggest funder through USAID, about 64 million. And then the Pentagon was the second biggest. So the whole, it wasn't just Fauci, it was the whole US intelligence military apparatus that was basically handing over cutting edge military technology, bioweapons technology to these Chinese scientists who were messing with it. It's really a strange thing. And then, so then the, you have an intelligence officer shutting down the investigation, which Catherine Heben documents. And then, but then Republicans in Congress, when Biden comes in, say, hey, you got to investigate this. You got to figure out, because there's some mounting evidence that it came from the Wuhan lab. So he says, okay, I'm going to do it. He says, I'm going to get all 22 U.S. intelligence agencies to get together and figure this out. And he said, and come back to me in 90 days. Who does he put in charge of it? Avril Haines. So she signed, you know, then she comes with a thing that says, well, nobody knows, we'll never know. You know, she comes with this report in August of 2021. Nobody knows, we're never going to be able to find out. The intelligence agencies say that we can't figure it out. And so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have good optics that the same person, and, you know, and she continues to be the primary advisor to President Biden on these, on, you know, on coronavirus. I'm just finishing now this book on the Wuhan lab. And I, you know, I had to kind of put together this history, which was fascinating because, you know, why was the CIA so involved with gain of function and so obsessed with it? And I went back and kind of traced this history, which is the CIA was created in 1947. And the first task that it was given was Operation Paperclip, which had already been ongoing. The Joint Chiefs were already bringing it over, but that was bringing over all the Nazi weapons scientists, many of them who were destined for the gallows in Nuremberg. And they, and the CIA created these rat lines to smuggle them out from under the nose of Nuremberg prosecutors and bring them over to Fort Detrick and to other these, you know, weapons labs. A lot of them were nuke scientists, but a lot of them were bioweapons scientists, because Hitler and Goebbels had, or Goering had a huge bioweapons program, and they'd done a lot of work on it. They had a lot of cutting edge stuff. At the same time, the biggest bioweapons program was in Japan, and it was managed by a scientist called Shiro Ishii, who was just this diabolical Mengele-like scientist who was doing human experiments that were, you know, as bad as anything that the Nazis did. But he then was brought into the, under the U.S. wing and protected from the Russians, who wanted to hang him. And they brought all those scientists over, that, you know, that not, it was called Japanese Paperclip. So in that program, they brought all the Japanese scientists. And those scientists who initiated the U.S. bioweapons program at its birth, not only imprinted it with a lot of their, you know, cell cultures, et cetera, but also with a lot of their, I would say, ethical elasticity or ethical lacunae. So there, and that continues to, you know, to sort of infect the entire bioweapons program. Now, we put huge amounts of money into bioweapons. In 1969, we had nuclear equivalents. They were bragging that they could kill everybody, basically everybody in the world for 29 cents a person, 29 cents a death. This is what they were, you know, this is what they were going for. That's success. They do the opposite of science. They were, you know, scientists are the opposite of medicine. Medicine tries to save people's lives from all of these, you know, microbes, et cetera. And they were trying to enhance the microbes to make them antibiotic resistant, to make them spread faster, to make them deadlier, et cetera. 1969, Nixon goes in there and shuts down the whole program. And everybody's shocked. And those guys were very angry. Now, here's what happens, and they're living in the basements of the Pentagon, and they're trying to bring this back. The CIA is secretly doing bioweapons. They leave Fort Detrick with all their cultures illegally, and they store them in these warehouses in New York. And they're trying constantly through the neocons, who become their allies, to revive the bioweapons program. Then 9/11 happens. And 9/11, the neocons bring off of the shelf the Patriot Act, which basically is the beginning of the surveillance state in our country. And nobody reads it. The only congressman to read it was my campaign manager, Dennis Kucinich. And he was in Congress at that time. And he told me not one copy was available to any congressman. The 350 Act had suddenly appeared the day after 9/11. And that dismantles basically the United States Constitution. Interestingly, that act, which nobody read, had a provision in it that revokes effectively the Geneva Convention and the Nixon's bioweapons charter. So all of the, you know, the, so it basically relaunched the bioweapons arms race. There were two guys who were blocking it, Patrick Leahy and Tom Daschle. A week later, they're stopping it. They're not going to let it pass. A week later, they get envelopes filled with anthrax in their offices. Congress is shut down. They're shut up. And while Congress is shut down, the Patriot Act gets passed. And the Patriot Act relaunches the arms race. So the military begins. And by the way, that anthrax, which was also used as the excuse for going into Iraq and invading Iraq because Saddam Hussein did it, you know, we were told. It turns out after a two-year investigation, the FBI came back and said that anthrax was Ames anthrax, highly sophisticated. There's only one place in the world it could have come from, Fort Detrick, which is the CIA Pentagon lab. So at that point, the Pentagon began pumping a lot of money into bioweapons, about $2 billion a year, but they don't want to do it because they don't know if the Patriot Act is actually, you know, legal. Because the Patriot Act, what it says is, we're not revoking the Geneva Convention. We're not invoking the Bioweapons Charter. But we're making a law that any federal official that violates those two bills cannot be prosecuted. So the bill, so the treaties are still in place, but, you know, they give an exemption to all federal officials. The Pentagon's not sure that that's legal. And by the way, if you violate those provisions of Geneva, it's a death penalty. You get hanged. So they were worried about doing it. So they, instead of putting it in-house at the Pentagon, they put it all in NIH in Tony Fauci's shop. They give him a 68% raise, which is why he became the highest paid federal official in history. He was making more, $450,000 a year. The president only makes $400,000. But it's because of that military salary he got, the 68% raise in the military. So he had to do bioweapons development. That's why he was going to do it in gain of function. And then in 2014, three of the bugs escaped from labs in the United States, and everybody finds out about it. Congress has hearings. 300 scientists write letters to Obama saying, sign a letter to Obama saying, you got to shut down Tony Fauci. He's going to create an epidemic. Obama shuts down all of Fauci's projects, orders them closed, has a moratorium, but Fauci doesn't shut them down. He continues doing them, and then he starts shipping everything over to Wuhan, where he can do it offshore, out of sight of, you know, these federal overseers and all the nosy scientists like Richard Ebright and the others from the Cambridge Working Group who were horrified by what he was doing. And that's kind of why the short story of why, you know, we're doing all this stuff in Wuhan rather than doing it at University of North Carolina and Galveston, which is where they were doing it before.
Bloody hell, Robert.